John Batchelor with my colleague Sinan Chitty of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, head of the Turkey program. Sinan, during the end of the conflict in the north, Hezbollah, when it retreated after the decap, there was also reporting about Turkey moving into Syria. I didn't follow it closely at the time, but I learned that there had been a request of the so-called government in Damascus, al-Shara, to take over or use an airfield in central Syria by the Turkish Air Force. I'm not able to find another reference to that since then. To your knowledge, has that happened? Is the Turkish military planted in central Syria now?
Not at all. So the Turkish military is, as best estimates, guessing around 20,000 Turkish regular troops are stationed in, across northern Syria's border with Turkey in different sort of military installations at the invitation and acceptance of the Syria's government, right? Turkey does have desires to essentially position Turkish warplanes closer to Damascus in central Syria, as you suggest, and they were within hours of stationing some of their F-16 fighters and other military defensive equipment or offensive equipment, depending on your perspective, in places like Palmyra and a former airbase, Syrian airbase used there. But just hours before they could deploy personnel and equipment to that thing, that was bombed out of use by the Israeli military. And that essentially was Israel's way of signaling to the Turks, as well as the Syrian government, that the forward presence of or forward deployment of Turkish military equipment, specifically offensive capabilities such as Air Force, would not be tolerated by Israel, simply because the Israelis fear that the positioning of such equipment is far too close to the Israeli border. And this is one of the reasons which I believe that if the potential for conflict between Israel and Turkey exists, it's not because either Erdogan or Netanyahu, you know, are interested or are poised to declare war one way or another, but because of the sort of the potential for miscalculating inside of Syria could sort of trigger an unforeseen event. You know, what if, you know, an F-16, a Turkish F-16, had been positioned or deployed inside of this airbase just as the Israeli military was striking this position and destroyed a Turkish aircraft? How would the Turks have responded? That's what I mean by miscalculation. There's a lot of brinksmanship going on inside of Syria between Israel and Turkey. And unfortunately, you know, right now, nothing has, you know, upset the balance of power or the détente, I should say. But that does not mean that that could be unsettled.
More possibilities, but I go immediately to the planned presentation of al-Shara at the United Nations General Assembly, I believe on the 24th of the month. Al-Shara speaks for what he says is the government of Syria, but he would not be there, I read, without the support of Ankara and Mr. Erdogan. What do you expect to hear from al-Shara speaking in a fashion that you can believe that Mr. Erdogan would endorse? What are you anticipating from the UN?
Well, this is, first of all, it's unique, almost unique. We have not seen a Syrian president address the United Nations for decades, to say the least, right? I mean, Syria has been declared a supporter of terrorism for decades. So what we're seeing is close to unprecedented. It's also worth pointing out that you're right. I think without Ankara's support, we would not have a President Shara, you know, addressing the United Nations at this point in time, and that Ankara has a vested interest in making sure that Shara, you know, essentially succeeds in Syria. But we also know that Shara has a lot of challenges ahead of him in terms of keeping a unified and centralized government of Syria intact. He has a lot of challenges in terms of keeping minorities in Syria, specifically the Kurds, the Druze, the Christians, the Alawite components, satisfied. But he's also got a huge challenge in making sure the security services of Syria do not carry out vigilante attacks against these entities without his approval. So there's this sort of notion that he has to be able to control the urges of his forces, the majority of whom were in some part or fashion in the past former members of jihadist networks, but are now just wear the uniform of the Syria's new military. So there is this question mark of whether he can maintain a unified Syria. But as far as Erdogan is concerned, from a Turkish perspective, we actually saw the two shaking hands in Doha just yesterday, in terms of following the Qatari strike and the Israeli strike on Qatar. And that handshake looked a bit forced and it looked a bit strained. And the commentary that I'm seeing from that, which probably is accurate, is Erdogan has higher expectations from Sharai, saying he could basically do better. He thinks that Sharai is not doing enough to essentially grab power, the horns of power in his hand in Syria, and basically centralize power and keep it in his hands, as in he's probably pandering too much to the whims and desires of independent minorities, specifically the Kurds, who are trying to maintain some sort of independence from...
We have 30 seconds, Sinan. So 30 seconds, please continue.
And so once this happens in New York, once this meeting happens, it is an opportunity for Sharai to showcase the world and the Western Hemisphere that he's still in charge of Syria. But the question will be, I think, is when observers look at him, is I think they'll all be thinking in their head, right, is how long can this possibly last?
Sinan Chidi for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.